Now, think about what it means to be Midwestern. Maybe things like humble or hardworking or friendly come to mind. But beyond a few familiar words, maybe some stereotypes, it can be a surprisingly tough question to answer. Our next guest looked back into history, literature, and his own life to try to pin down what Midwestern identity is all about, how we fit into the American story, and what the region's future could look like. Philip Christman is a lecturer in the English department at the University of Michigan. He's the author of the new book, Midwest Futures. It's out this week. Phil, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, Rob, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Sure. Now, in your book, you talk about the different ways we try to define the Midwest historically, culturally, even geographically. However you slice it, it's a slippery topic. Why is it so hard to pin down what Midwestern means?
Well, I mean, it's partly because the concept, it's kind of one of those concepts or ideas that got born more than one time for more than one ideological purpose. So, you know, I mean, when we try to think about what the Midwest is, I mean, do we start during the colonial and revolutionary period when this was the old, what's now called the Old Northwest Territory, you know, when Ohio was the area that was like to the west of the original 13 colonies? Does Midwest mean, the like the part of the, like all of the stereotypes from the early 20th century about, you know, rurality and, you know, the L. Frank Baum kind of world, you know, what are we really talking about? I mean, it's a huge amorphous region, that doesn't kind of naturally have any one thing connecting itself. So all we have is history, and history says different things.
Right. And I think one concept sometimes is that it's this sort of timeless, unchanging place. And you tackle that by digging into the history. And you point out that, okay, we kind of assume in American history that the Midwest just sort of happened naturally. And you dug into the specific reasons that speculators and others had an interest in this region in the first place. Can you spell out some of that story for us?
Yeah, it's a really fascinating story. And like, quite frankly, like a general rule that I learned from doing the research for this book about how to live your intellectual life is like, man, whatever the stereotypical story is, just assume that it's covering like the exact diametric opposite. Right. And that's definitely true about the Midwest. You know, so it's been a region that's like very future obsessed and has always, you know, played a role in this country's dreams about its own future. So, yeah, I mean, like, first of all, like, again, getting back to the immediate like post-colonial revolutionary period, I mean, what was the Midwest to the people you know, who constituted the government of the new United States? Well, it was a place where they were all making different competing land claims, right? Like George Washington had so many land claims out this way that, you know, like it was basically a foreordained question for him whether, he was going to do everything he could to make sure that there were no natives living in this area anymore so that he could buy and sell this land. And that's true for lots of people. And then as that process went forward, it also became a place where people sort of dreamed big utopian dreams, right? And it, you know, it became a site where people dreamed sort of as time went on, like big dreams about what big capitalism could mean, or you know, the future of business, the future of technology. So, I mean, this has been the staging ground for several different visions of what the American future could look like. It's precisely not timeless and unchanging.
And you mentioned Native Americans. And I think when we think in our, you know, history classes and our pop culture, We see the Native Americans with the settlers in the 1600s. We see them in the Old West. This huge story happened here in the Midwest, and we just kind of, I don't know, blink it away. Why did that disappear so much where these other ends of the story maybe didn't?
Yeah, well, I mean, I would argue that it disappeared because, you know, it had to disappear, you know, or like, you know, quite frankly, a lot of us wouldn't be able to live with ourselves, especially, you know, the more powerful and privileged you are, the more you wouldn't be able to live with yourself, because what was done to the Native Americans was and is, you know, just kind of criminal in really, really ongoing ways. And also, I think another reason that we don't hear as much about Native American history is, you know, Noam Chomsky, when he talks about Cuba and kind of like how insistent the United States has always been that like no socialist Latin American regime can prosper. And that's not to say that there haven't been like terrible dictatorial socialist regimes all around the world. But, you know, the insistence that we can't let like a Pinochet or whatever that we can't let a Salvador Allende do anything right or get any credit for it is the threat of a good example. And I think to some extent the suppression of the Native American story is also about the threat of a good example. This is a group of people that is less destructive of its natural environment than white people tend to even be able to be. Like I wouldn't even know how to be as earth careful as a lot of Native intellectuals are. You know, even if I wanted to be, like my life ways, the structures that I have to live in don't permit it. So like these days I'm actually looking to Native American scholarship and activism as an inspiration, what people accomplished at Standing Rock and places like that, you know, for a future that isn't just like completely, you know, defined by runaway climate change.
Talking to Philip Christman. His new book is Midwest Futures. It's out this week. He digs deep into history, literature, and more to try to figure out what Midwestern identity means. Philip, you, as I mentioned, looked into literature, and you found from the beginning of European settlement in the area this sense of Midwestern as a synonym for boring in a lot of ways. How did we establish a boringness as a stereotype, both among us as Midwesterners and for people on the coast?
Well, I think definitely part of that story, and this also you know, something that's covered really well in a book by James Shortridge called The Middle West from the mid 80s, which was you know, a book that I use a lot in my book. You know, he talks about how as the country was sort of like on the tipping point between the U.S. as a whole was on the tipping point between being a primarily urban or a primarily rural culture, that kind of the image of, you know, my old Kansas grandparents, you know, my old Minnesota, you know, farmstead, you know, the kind of little house on the prairie imagery that became really important to the culture because it was a way of kind of enshrining and memorializing this pioneer narrative that was important for people's self-esteem and self-concept in a time when, like, you know, most people are just not going to be pioneers anymore. At least you're not going to be pioneers in the literal sense. You're going to be clocking in for your shift at the factory, because that's what our economy is now, right?
And then in pop culture, something I've noticed over the years is that, okay, you're putting a sitcom, say, in New York, and you want the sort of everyman character or the naive person in the big city. Let's make him be from Wisconsin or somewhere else in the Midwest. That we're kind of a stock character in pop culture in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I sometimes well, actually, there's a famous quip to this effect that from the painter, the what's his name? The American Gothic guy, Grant Wood. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the East kind of thinks of the Midwest as a colony of the East. And that is very much how how I don't like to get into these like kind of anti-coastal narratives, sure. You know, too much, but that can get kind of reactionary. But yeah, I mean, to some extent, narratives that are spun in you know, L.A., New York, these places that see themselves as the centers, the cultural centers of the country, do kind of fall into seeing people from anywhere else as kind of raw material. Right. You know, you have to come east in order to become a full human being, you know, or you have to go to L.A. In order to be refined into a full human being. And it's, you know, it's ridiculous. I mean, I've never been happier than, you know, when I was living in the Twin Cities. It's, you know, or when I was living in Milwaukee during grad school. Like those are great cities. If you're tired of them, you're tired of life.
We're talking to Phil Christman, author of the new book Midwest Futures, about the Midwest region's place in the story of America, of American culture, and how its residents, I guess us, how we fit in. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you had to try to define the Midwestern identity, what would you say? Do you see positives and negatives, maybe both at the same time? Why do you think the Midwest sometimes becomes a synonym for normal or maybe even boring? What is the Midwest geographically? Who counts? Do we in Wisconsin? I think most people say so, not everybody. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up a conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Phil Christman, author of the new book, Midwest Futures. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think it means to be Midwestern? Is there a common cultural identity for better or worse? What's the good, the not so good parts of life in the region? What do you think has created Midwestern sensibilities and quirks we have, the stereotypes people have of us? The stereotypes we have of them, whoever they are outside the Midwest, call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Phil, you mentioned, you know, often the stereotype turns out to be the opposite of the reality. Another example you give in the book is the idea that, you know, Midwestern farmers were isolationist when, in fact, farmers 100 years ago and today are very interested in the world and hopefully selling their products to the rest of it. Could you talk about why that stereotype, again, doesn't quite match reality?
Yeah, and a big influence. I always try to shout out my influences. a big influence here was Kristen Hoganson's book, The Heartland, which came out last year, and it's a history of the concept of the Heartland. It's good. It's really, really good. And yeah, she talks extensively about that. Like, she actually went through and read all these old farming trade journals from the 19th and early 20th century, which is just heroic scholarly labor that I would never have the endurance to do. And yeah, there was absolutely an interest in, I mean, one just understanding world markets, because farming is an insanely difficult business, and like full of risk, and so much of like the history of currency itself, like going back hundreds of years, has to do with, and the history of insurance and risk just has to do with trying to take some of the chanciness out of farming. And two, more specifically, there was fear that we were going to get U.S. farmers and Midwestern farmers in particular were going to get outcompeted by Latin American farmers, because the soil there is so good. The soil in some parts of Latin America is quite fruitful, right? Mm-hmm. And Midwesterners did not want to be outflanked there. That conversation goes back to the 19th century. I the idea of isolationist or disengaged from the world is I mean, and more generally, I guess I always think that that's kind of a problematic label because, you know, disengaging is often anyway kind of a form of engaging, right? I mean, people usually have arguments for why the particular way in which I intend to disengage from the market or from the world scene is, like, quote unquote, you know, better or will lead to a better outcome for everybody. So I feel like it's a misnomer to begin with.
And I'll mention we talked to Sarah Smarsha here on the show about that very book. It's been a few, I think a year or two now. We're talking to Phil Crispin right now, author of the new book, Midwest Futures. Phil, you mentioned in the book that your own hometown, I think it was Alma, Michigan, has been featured in a couple different scholarly studies under a pseudonym in some cases. Blankton, was it? Or something really generic like
literally.
That. So your very hometown was picked as sort of this generic representation of the Midwest. What's that like?
That was surreal. That was like the moment in the research process when it just felt most Twilight Zone-y, because I don't know how much other people who grew up in like Midwest farm towns or who grew up in that particular town feel this way. And I don't want to project my own mindset too much on other people, but I mean, I just always felt like I really did live in the middle of nowhere. If I were to turn on the TV news and someone even said the word Alma, I would have been like surprised. Right. It just felt like there was like an invisible dome that repelled attention. And I remember feeling that way so far back. I don't even know, you know, when I started to feel that way, like deep, deep, you know, back in childhood. And, you know, some parts of the book, I try to figure out where that came from. So in the process of researching this book, I discovered that there are two dissertations from the early 20th century that are just about the economy of my town, which, like, to be clear, 10 to 12,000 people in this place, not a huge population center. One of them, and they both specifically say that the reason they wanted to write about my little Michigan farm town is because it's just so representative. I mean, this, you know, and you find that in other social science from the early 20th century. Most famously, that book Middletown by Robert and Helen Lind, where they write an analysis of a town, and it's Muncie, Indiana, but they call it Middletown. And they actually say, when we were looking for the normalest place we could possibly investigate, of course we knew it had to be a Midwestern town. Like, they don't even feel the need to explain why they think that. It's just like, oh, duh, of course. And that's basically the reason that both of these economists give. And yeah, one of them, to preserve confidentiality, I guess, calls it Blankton, which is like, it's a compliment and an insult. And you know, that at the same time, that way of thinking about the Midwest as so normal and so average has, like, in one way, it gives us too much credit, makes us kind of like this generic pattern for humanity. And then in another way, it's deeply insulting and causes us not to actually see, as individuals, communities, whatever, and regionally, our own particularities at all.
A quick correction. I said Sarah Smarsh. The Heartland book we were talking about was Kristen Hoganson. She's the one who was on the show in the past. Just in our last minute or so, Phil, talk about the future now a little bit. What roads ahead briefly do you see for us here in the Midwest?
Yeah. Well, I think that we should be, I'm just going to be very, very specific and say that we should be extremely suspicious of and strongly resist any attempts to privatize the Great Lakes, because you know, the world is getting warmer and smaller, and people are going to want, you know, people are going to want to privatize and fence off as much of 20% of the world's freshwater as they possibly can in a world that's like that. And you know, I I think we can kind of think of the Great Lakes as a little bit of a bellwether for how the struggle to keep the Commonwealth truly common is going.
We'll leave it there, Phil. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good one.
You too. That's Philip Christman, a lecturer in the English department at the University of Michigan. He joined us for a look at his new book out this week called Midwest Futures, looking into history, literature, pop culture, and more to try to figure out what Midwestern identity is, what it is geographically, and what the future could look like here in the region.